Good morning. This is Jonathan Perk, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Arthur Grant, who is the director of the Comprehensive Epilepsy Center here at Downstate Medical Center. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, Jonathan.
So thank you for talking with us, and today we're going to talk about a very important topic, an approach to first-time seizure. And what we would like to do is to first talk about the situation that our residents face on a daily basis, in which they are called to the emergency room to assess and treat a patient who had a witnessed grand mal tonic-clonic seizure, and the residents call in. So what would you tell that resident to do?
Okay. Well, first of all, just to clarify, we're talking about the situation where a patient has had their first ever generalized tonic-clonic or convulsive seizure, and it is for that reason that the patient is brought to the emergency room. So in that setting, what's most important is to determine if there was an acute provoking factor that caused the seizure. And the differential diagnosis for provocative factors really is like the differential diagnosis for almost any general medical complaint. So, for instance, trauma. Obviously, if somebody has just had significant accidental or deliberate head injury, that can provoke a seizure. Infection. There are certain infections that can spread to the brain, cause encephalitis or meningitis that can provoke a seizure. There are certain medications, both prescription medications and illegal street drugs that can provoke a seizure. And in particular, the prescription medication that we encounter more often than any other as causing a first ever convulsive seizure is bupropion or Wellbutrin. And others that we see less often are lithium and clozapine. Then there's withdrawal from drugs can provoke a seizure. Of course, the most common is withdrawal from alcohol, the well-known alcohol withdrawal seizures. And those seizures occur 24 to 72 hours after the person has had their last drink, and almost always alcohol withdrawal seizures are in the setting of someone who has alcoholism, who had been drinking daily for weeks or months, or who had been on a several day binge of consuming very large amounts of alcohol, and they suddenly stop drinking for one reason or another. And then, as I said, 24 to 72 hours later, they have a withdrawal seizure. People also can get withdrawal seizures from benzodiazepines and barbiturates. But in practice, the overwhelming majority of such seizures are due to withdrawal from alcohol. A large number of metabolic disturbances can provoke seizure. Hypernatremia, hyponatremia, hyperglycemia, not hypoglycemia, which causes coma and eventually death, but certainly hyperglycemia. And I won't give an exhaustive list, but there are many other electrolyte and metabolic disturbances that can provoke convulsive seizures. Lesions in the brain, a tumor, hemorrhage into a tumor, an acute stroke, hemorrhagic, much more likely than ischemic, to provoke a seizure, but on rare occasions, ischemic strokes can present with both the focal findings associated with the stroke and with a convulsive seizure. Now, that's not a complete list, but I think I covered the major bases, and it should be clear that a careful history combined with obtaining basic laboratory studies, the CBC and metabolic panel, as well as a head CT scan, an MRI is not necessary for the initial workup, should allow the evaluating neurologist to rule in or rule out pretty much all of the possible provoking causes that I just mentioned. So, for instance, if you get a history that the patient is a chronic alcoholic and they stopped drinking a day or two ago, most likely the seizure was alcohol withdrawal. Obviously, if the imaging shows a tumor or acute hemorrhage, that's most likely the cause of the seizure. If the patient's taking bupropion or Wellbutrin is the trade name for depression and their dose was recently increased, you don't know for sure, but you know that was probably the cause. With that drug, it's well known that the risk of seizure is dose-related, and particularly doses above 400 milligrams a day are associated with significantly increased risk of seizure. And I've seen maybe, five or six patients in my career who were otherwise completely healthy neurologically and who had a convulsive seizure due to an increase in their daily Wellbutrin dose. So just to summarize, the situation of a patient with a definite witnessed generalized tonic-clonic or convulsive seizure brought into the emergency room needs to be evaluated for the acute possible provocative causes of that seizure, which include trauma, infection, drugs or medications, withdrawal from certain drugs, metabolic disturbances, and lesions in the brain. And just one final comment with respect to infection. Usually, from the condition of the patient, their vital signs, and again, basic laboratory studies, you'll know right away whether the patient has some kind of systemic or other infection. And if it seems like that is the case, then a lumbar puncture is definitely indicated because you need to know whether the patient has an infectious meningitis or not. But your suspicion of that probably will be raised on the basis of history and physical findings on the exam already, in which case you're going to be thinking about doing an LP to make a diagnosis or to rule out meningitis in addition to any concern you would have that that is the underlying cause of the seizure.
Wow, that's a fantastic overview. Thank you for that. So let's say our diligent resident went through all this differential diagnosis and ruled out life-threatening situations and actually came to the decision that the patient does not have to be admitted and can be sent out to for further workup in the office. So let's switch gears to that scenario. And I guess we can start with first thinking of what is the differential diagnosis of seizure?
So in this case, we're evaluating a patient who comes in as an outpatient to our neurology office who has had let's say one episode that is very suspicious for a generalized tonic-clonic or convulsive seizure. The differential diagnosis consists of course, actual definite epileptic seizure, a psychogenic pseudo-seizure, convulsive syncope, which is when a person has a syncopal episode as the primary event, but the syncope causes a seizure immediately. Can you pause it? We'll go back. So now we're talking about a patient who comes in to our office to see a neurologist as an outpatient who has had an episode highly suspicious for their first ever generalized tonic-clonic or convulsive seizure. Now, in this case, there is a differential diagnosis of the episode itself, and I won't go into this in great detail, but clearly the seizure, or the event rather, could have been and most likely was a genuine epileptic grand mal or generalized tonic-clonic seizure. It could have been a psychogenic pseudo-seizure, in other words, a episode or spell in which the person was shaking all of their extremities, having clonic jerking of their body, axial muscles as well, but this was caused by an underlying psychiatric disorder, most likely conversion disorder, and it was not a genuine epileptic seizure. Now, we do, of course, as epileptologists, often face this challenge of determining whether a patient's spells are actually epileptic seizures or psychogenic pseudo-seizures, but I'm not going to discuss that anymore at this point. We can save that for another podcast. But it is simply important to keep in mind that just because a patient comes to the office with a history of having had some kind of episode that included whole body shaking and jerking, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was, in fact, an epileptic seizure. The other item on the differential is convulsive syncope, and this is a situation where the patient has a syncopal episode as the primary problem, but the syncope leads to a generalized tonic-clonic seizure, probably because of acute changes in brain metabolism, oxygenation, and so forth that result from the decreased blood flow to the brain that caused the syncope in the first place. Most of the time, you'll be able to determine this from history because the patient will have a definite history of previous presyncopal or genuine syncopal episodes with the typical symptoms of diaphoresis, vertigo, feeling like a shade is coming over their eyes, in the setting of stage fright or some other circumstance which is known to trigger vasovagal syncope in susceptible people. And it just turns out that eventually one of those episodes resulted in a seizure. So I'm going to proceed now, assuming that you've decided that the patient did in fact have an epileptic seizure that was not due to syncope, and that was in fact a true seizure and not a psychogenic pseudo-seizure. And since you're seeing the person as an outpatient, I'm going to assume that the provocative, or at least the majority of the possible provocations that we just discussed that need to be ruled out in the emergency room have been ruled out. So, for example, you've ruled out acute head trauma, you've ruled out meningitis, encephalitis, you've ruled out tumor, stroke, etc. So, in this situation with in the office, you may still need to determine whether the seizure was provoked by medication, because that may not have been determined in the emergency room, particularly if you or whoever saw the patient wasn't able to get a detailed history of the patient's medications, and, for instance, and also whether they take any street drugs or drugs of abuse. So again, Wellbutrin or bupropion, a small number of other psychiatric medications can provoke seizures, and of course alcohol withdrawal and acute intoxication with cocaine and amphetamines can provoke a seizure. So in the office setting, you will need to review that history with the patient. So assuming that you have excluded all of those possible provocative factors, you're now faced with the situation of a patient who you believe has had a single unprovoked generalized tonic-clonic or grand mal seizure. And this gets into a somewhat controversial area with respect to the prognosis for the patient and whether anti-epileptic drug treatment is indicated. Now, historically in epilepsy, really up until the last couple of years, the mantra has been that a patient does not have epilepsy until they have had two unprovoked seizures. So in other words, one unprovoked seizure does not epilepsy make. And there was good reasoning for that. Namely, up to perhaps 8 to 10% of human beings will have one unprovoked grand mal seizure in their life. But only about 1% or slightly above 1% of people end up with epilepsy. So that means that 90% of the people, approximately 90%, who have one or have their first ever unprovoked grand mal seizure will never have another seizure. And we certainly don't want to be treating all of those people when they don't even have epilepsy. What has changed in the last couple years is the realization that there is a group of people who have one unprovoked seizure. In other words, that 10% or so who are going to go on to have more seizures, and that we may be able to have a pretty good idea in some instances after that first seizure whether they are going to go on to have another one. In other words, whether that first seizure is the onset of epilepsy. And if we can figure that out before they have another seizure, then we should initiate treatment. So, I'll come back to that in a moment, but another very important part of the evaluation of this outpatient who's come to you with their first ever grand mal seizure is to consider the fact that this person may have had other types of epileptic seizure in the past and simply may not have been aware of it. And although this is their first convulsive seizure, they've really had perhaps many seizures in their life and have a epileptic disorder that simply had been missed because the previous seizures weren't recognized as seizures. And there are several epilepsy syndromes in which this can occur, but I'll mention just one because it's probably the most common one that we see for patients in this situation. And that syndrome is juvenile myoclonic epilepsy, known as JME. So JME typically begins in adolescence with myoclonic seizures, which of course are single and less often multiple myoclonic jerks, usually of the upper extremities, but really potentially of any part of the body. And in JME, they usually occur in the morning within a couple hours of waking up, but can occur at any time of day. And it's actually fairly common that somebody will have the onset of morning myoclonic jerks, say in early adolescence, and they just don't realize that these are seizures. And they think they're nervous or edgy, and they just get accustomed to them. And then it's only 3 or 4 or 5, 6 years later, maybe in later adolescence, around 18, 19, 20 years old, or the early 20s, that they have their first ever grand mal seizure, and then end up coming to see you as a neurologist. And you really have to ask the right questions when obtaining a history from the patient to figure out if they have had, prior to the grand mal seizure, other episodes, other spells that could be seizures of another type. For example, as I was just saying, myoclonic seizures. And I've seen really many, many patients who fit this clinical situation. And once you've determined that, yes, they have had myoclonic seizures in the morning within an hour or two of waking up for many years, and then they have this generalized tonic-clonic seizure, you pretty much can make the diagnosis of JME right then and there, although an EEG is necessary really to be absolutely certain of the diagnosis. It is also possible that the patient has had a complex partial or what we now call discognitive seizures typical of temporal lobe epilepsy prior to their first grand mal seizure. But usually this history would have been known earlier, and the patient would have presented before the grand mal seizure because of the discognitive seizures. But once in a while, you will encounter a patient who has had brief or very mild discognitive seizures that were not diagnosed as seizures, and they don't come to attention until they've had a grand mal seizure. So in summary then, about evaluating this person as an outpatient who presents with their first ever generalized tonic-clonic seizure, you need to determine by taking a careful history from the patient and ideally from family members or spouse, someone who's around the patient frequently, whether they've had seizures of a different type prior to this grand mal seizure, in which case you have to diagnose the epilepsy syndrome. For example, is it juvenile myoclonic epilepsy, or perhaps juvenile absence epilepsy, temporal lobe epilepsy, and then initiate the appropriate treatment. Now, let's assume that you've taken this history and you're convinced that the patient has never had a seizure of any type prior to this initial generalized tonic-clonic seizure. And you've convinced yourself that this seizure was not provoked by medication, drug withdrawal, or any other cause. So you're truly facing the situation of a single unprovoked generalized tonic-clonic seizure. Now, at this point, if it hasn't been obtained already, you definitely need to get an EEG that includes wakefulness and sleep. And if you can get a prolonged EEG, in other words, more than the typical 30 minutes, that would be helpful simply because the more EEG you get, the more likely it is you'll pick up infrequent or sporadic abnormalities. Now, if you get the EEG and you do see epileptiform discharges, whether focal or generalized, usually, but not always, that will indicate that the person, in fact, does have epilepsy or does have a very high chance of a recurrent seizure. And depending on the characteristics of those abnormalities, which I won't get into now, you can at least tentatively make a diagnosis of an epilepsy syndrome and start appropriate anti-epileptic drug treatment. Now, the final, I guess, branch in this tree is you get the EEG and it's completely normal. Your neuroimaging has been normal. Everything's normal. And the patient has had this one seizure. And this is the situation where anti-epileptic drug treatment is not indicated. The situation of the single unprovoked, definitely unprovoked convulsive seizure with no history of seizure of any other type, and we do not initiate treatment, and it's watchful waiting. Hopefully the person will never have another seizure in their life, and they will never have to see you again. But if they do, then the person, by definition, has epilepsy, and you'll have to initiate appropriate treatment.
Well, thank you again for this fantastic overview. Certainly helped me clarify the way I would kind of put the patients in an algorithm. So what would be the kind of main take-home messages that you would like our listeners to take?
Well, first of all, for the patient you're seeing in the emergency room who's had a generalized tonic-clonic seizure, you really need to rule out or rule in the emergency underlying potential causes. So just briefly, head trauma, intracranial lesion, drug intoxication, drug withdrawal, and metabolic disturbances. For the person who comes into your office with a history of a first ever grand mal seizure, first you need to determine if it truly was an epileptic seizure. And assuming that it was, you need to determine if the person has or most likely has some sort of epilepsy or doesn't.
Well, thank you very much. Again, this is Jonathan Perk, and with me, Dr. Arthur Grant, the director of the Comprehensive Epilepsy Center here at Penn State. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.